First phase here, there won't be a Blue Ribbon Committee. Maybe you could just give some thought as to what would be a fair and equitable solution that a Blue Ribbon Committee would have come up with and report back to the committee. Okay?
I'd be glad to try to respond to that. Basically, as some of the questions that were just answered, we've heard testimony that schools are losing their music, their art, and their PE teachers. Our elementary schools do not even have these. We've talked about classes that have 25, 30 kids in them. We have that in our barrel schools and in our village schools. We have classes that have 15 to 18 kids in four grades, one teacher teaching that many. It's a full-time occupation. Rural education takes generalists and it takes specialists. And it is very difficult. There is just basically no way for me to have a school board meeting, cost, and we occasionally try to go to the villages three times a year for school board meetings, to charter planes and go to the villages. Costs $20,000 to have a meeting, but you need to do that to allow parents to realize that they do have a school board meeting, because the school board is at least 300 miles away from at least three of our communities, so we are a figment of their imagination most of the time. So those sort of things come into play, the actual cost of economy. And as I would, if I could go back to Central Wilkins' question about how do I go home and explain to my folks, and I understand that, but we are associating there, of course, CIP money, capital project money, and we're equating it to perhaps foundation money, which, of course, it isn't tied together. And I can understand the bond issue problem, because across the North Slope, as we speak, every community has met and discussed what are your top priorities for next year for funding. And every community, above everything else, the people voted, and the Native communities got together, their leadership, and also the city councils, and they voted that schools are our number one priority. That was in every village across the North Slope. So those type of inequities are out there, and we try to bring them as close to being equitable as we can, but we'll never be able to approach it.
Senator Worth?
I understand that, and we too, from my district as well as everybody else's district, education is the number one priority, just the same as it is in Egigik, Alaska. Now, understanding that, what I'm asking you to do is consider what the recommendations of your Blue Ribbon Commission would be and report those back to this committee, because there won't be a commission. And I would like you to be a part of the process, and your task force, jump in right now while you have a chance, and let's see if we can find a resolve to this, because everybody in this state is trying to figure out a way to best educate our children, regardless of where we live. And so I'm just asking you, please be a part of this process and don't wait for a mysterious commission from afar. I don't think we have that luxury this year, because we've been doing it for 9 years, as Senator Lehman had said. I haven't been here for 9 years, but Senator Wilkins has been here for 60 days, and I think he's rolling.
Okay.
He is. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Ork. Whatever that means.
Pay attention.
That was
what it means.
Yeah. Other questions of the folks from Barrow?
Thank you very much.
Mr. Dishman, you speak, and other people have spoke of the high cost of this and high cost of that, and I think we're all aware of that. Then you're very supportive of the area cost differential study, and those types of things would attempt to be leveled out as best that they could, as they are today. So those things are sort of set aside. You speak about the funding and the fact that it's almost a given that if these bills go through, the funding will decrease. Have you given some thought to how the North Slope Borough can start to participate in a greater manner to fund the education needs?
Sir, you know, I am a two-year vet of the North Slope, but I've learned a great deal in a short period of time. As I understand it, we are capped at 20 mills. From that 20 mills, we presently tax at 18.50. Of that, $60 million is capped for operations. We get a portion to operate our schools. For every dollar the state sends us to operate our schools, the North Slope Borough contributes $3 more. The state money that we get in the North Slope Borough, total state money, will not operate Barrow High School and the Pollock Elementary School. So that leaves 8 schools that must be operated by the funds that come from the North Slope Borough. So those type of funds, the generosity that comes from the North Slope Borough to the schools, has been unquestionable. Also, you need to remember that the difference between what we tax at 1850 and 20 mils is surplus money that the oil companies have to pay that tax. That's been coming to the state for years and years and years. Please look into the amount of additional money that the North Slope Borough has contributed to the welfare of this state over the years, even back when the borough was taxing at 16 mils. So I think there's been a big chunk of money donated. And so I truly feel that a Blue Ribbon Committee would be like Mrs. Green said. She knows that I've been sitting on these for 15 years. And every one of them I've ever sat on said the same thing. We do not have a distribution problem. We have a funding problem. And my philosophy with that is that redistributing the money that we currently have in this state to the various school districts is somewhat like rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. You know, the outcome is inevitable.
I guess I would just suggest that perhaps some thought be given to other funding sources within the borough, and leave it at that. You know, I would just say that about the bonding issue, bonds are, of course, votes are about dollars. That's obvious. But in my mind, bonds at any particular, it's sort of like a company's balance sheet. It's a snapshot at any particular time on the health of that company. I think bond issues, bond votes are a snapshot at any particular time of how one feels about their government. So I think we're very much connected that when you do a bond issue on for schools, it's not only a dollar vote, it's also a snapshot of the people at the time, how they feel about their school district, or for that matter, their city, or whatever else they happen to be voting on. So I think they're absolutely interrelated. And we talk about equity, and really all we're asking for is that everyone in the state participate to pay for their own education to the extent that they can. And the way we define can is their assessed valuation of their particular organization, their ability to create wealth, whether it's a dollar or it's $13 billion. So that seems to be an agreed upon basis, and that's really all we're asking. So we are asking everyone to do the same. And that's what we're asking the North Slope Borough to do the same. If you define equity as your assessed valuation, that's the basis from which your funding should come. So that is one of the definitions I have of equity, and that's what I would ask you to think about. That's all the questions or statements I have. Anything else? We have one other person from the North Slope Borough Assembly, and you're welcome to stay there if Mr. Amott would like to come to the table. You're welcome to stay if you'd like.
We'd like to thank this committee for allowing us to participate, because we do feel welcome here. Thank you very much.
And we don't want this to be our last conversation.
Thank you.
We need some help from you, just as you need help from us. And so we want to participate in that.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming all the way to be with us this morning.
Matthew, you have some actions that we're asking for.
Mr. Amott?
My hope would be that this process take 2 or 3 years.
Before I start, I need to know if I can give my whole presentation. I've trimmed it down for this 5-minute limitation, and it cuts me quite a bit.
How long is your whole presentation?
Probably about 6 minutes.
But it's all in writing.
We can do that. You bet. You came all this way, you're more than welcome to sit there. We're going to, Mr. Amott is the last, then we have Mr. Rose and Mr. Ritchie. And I think then that is that's the end of our testimony this morning. Before you start, sir, we don't have a session this morning, so if we can go about maybe 5 after 11, that would complete it. Is that all right with everybody's schedule? Senator Ward?
I have an appointment at 11, but it's fine. I can come
Senator
right
Ellis?
Back.
How are we doing? You okay?
I just need to go rearrange an appointment, then I'll return.
Senator Lehman, what? You're okay if we go until about 5 after 11? Yeah. Okay, we're in good shape. Good morning, Mr. Is it Amott?
Amott. I'm Mike Amott. I'm an assembly member, vice president on the North Slope Borough. Thank you for the opportunity to address you and to comment on various issues that you have before you this session. I don't envy you the tasks you're faced with and the decisions you must deal with. On a smaller scale, I do the same. I'm on the North Slope Borough Assembly as the vice president, and I'm in my fourth term. I'm a new arrival above the Arctic Circle, having first experienced the North in 1964 on a seismic crew exploring for oil around Umiut and the Sag River areas. My second visit was into Point Hope as an archaeologist in 1967, and then each spring to participate in cultural activities. After obtaining teaching credentials, my wife and I moved to Point Hope in 1972, and then again we moved in 1975 to Barrow as teachers in the newly formed North Slope Borough. My wife continued with the district for 21 years. She eventually became the first Native woman superintendent in Alaska and one of two Native superintendents in the state. I'm giving you the background information to allow you to understand that I know the history and was involved in many of the things that have transpired in the North Slope. For the last 21 years, I've operated a small construction firm that has provided local employment, and since 1987, I've been involved in retirement planning for employees of the City of Barrow, Arctic Slope Native Association, North Slope Borough School District, our little college, as well as discussions with village corporations and individuals that need understanding in retirement planning. In my position as a retirement planning specialist and my very close contact with the school system and employees over the years, I know things that are not common knowledge. I know where people are planning to retire and live after completing their tenure on the North Slope. I know who the workers are in almost every corner of the slope. Being in construction, I also have close contact with most companies and their employees. I know what I'm talking about. When this issue came to my attention this year and last, I contacted officials in the school district to get an outline of programs that would be eliminated if this outrage occurred. It was very easy to understand the elimination process because I review the proposed school budgets every year since 1985, since I sit on the assembly. Program elimination not only strips our children of equitable educational opportunities, it destroys the employment opportunities of our local permanent residents. Our non-mandated programs will affect primarily classified workers. Those are the people that will predominantly retire in the North, or at least in Alaska. In the present budget proposal, the school district will provide an educational program that is comparable to the districts in the urban areas in basic education. Kids need more than just the basics, as you well are aware of in your own areas. Intramural sports, proms, clubs, and the like are important for kids. Can you imagine your own kids going to a high school prom with 10 teenagers in the whole class? Our district gets several schools together, but we don't have the flexibility of taking a bus across town. The state hasn't seen fit to tie our towns together with a road system, as in many other areas of the state. The proposals before you will turn back the clock in an attempt to push our area back in time when either the BIA or the state ran our schools. Most of us on the slope and in rural Alaska remember how inadequate and inequitable those systems were. When I worked in the state school system the year before the borough took over, we didn't even have enough paper to use in our classrooms. We were so desperate that my wife went to Kotzebue to collect reams of paper that had already been used on one side. I had to travel to a lake after school hours, 12 miles away, with my snow machine and sled to chop ice in order to have water in school for our children. We had honey buckets for toilets, and in the school, you can imagine how many times each day those buckets had to be hauled down the hallway because we had all the kids in town using them. We had two teachers attempting to teach all subjects in high school. We had some super teachers working for us, but most teachers have only one major area of expertise and one or two minors. There are 10 different subjects to be taught, 4 grade levels. Who was being shortchanged? That was only 20 years ago, not 120 years ago, like in the Wild West. Our district has a goal of providing equity in education, not only between a large community like Barrow and a smaller village like Coctovic, but equity between our small school population and your larger metropolitan schools, where teachers are required to teach their major and one or two minors. Not like we once did, where teachers taught their major and a minor, but a dozen other subjects that they learned the night before class. Our borough assembly has always been supportive of education and has forced our borough administration to fund the school request from local sources to ensure fair education for our children in order to prevent parents from sending kids to Anchorage or Fairbanks to get quality education, as happened with my wife. You mentioned equity in school funding. You should be increasing our funding from the state level rather than reducing. And you should be looking at all rural areas in an attempt to raise standards to at least our level so that they would be closer to your area levels. My wife and I both graduated from the Anchorage schools and know firsthand that our schools on the slope are getting close to what we had as high schoolers more than 30 years ago. I want to comment on a side effect your proposal accomplishes. Basic education is provided by certified teachers and administrators. This is required by state law. More than 95% of our certified staff are imported to the slope. Most of the support staff, classified employees, are local people. A reduction in programs that are the norms for children elsewhere will destroy the basic economic fabric of our village economies. We've been attempting to replace certified people coming from outside with permanent residents, but we're dealing with an age group population that was forced to leave home to obtain education during their teenage years, 4 to 6 years away from family and home. Just to get a high school diploma, kids had to travel to Oklahoma, Oregon, Sitka, Fairbanks, or Anchorage to live for years. To stay away for 4 more years for college was in most cases unthinkable. That age group now has kids that have recently graduated or still in school. They were so devastated by their own forced separation that it's still unthinkable to send kids away even for college. We're so close now to the point that we will be producing graduates that will not be hampered by the memory of separation, and we'll see more of our own getting certified to hold jobs in our schools. But in the meantime, this proposal will eliminate the programs, those that are still available in your school, which in turn eliminates the classified employment. In many of our communities, a large portion of the work is with schools. The wages earned are close to poverty with the cost of living in rural Alaska. And we force our local people back to a time 25 years ago when the man of the family had to seek employment in Fairbanks or Anchorage, while the best jobs at home were held by people buying farms in Texas and ranches in Montana. You also must remember that our area did not benefit from oil revenue. Monies went to the state to help municipalities in their needs and to fund our permanent fund program. Early in state history, men like Johnny Nusanginya and Eben Hobson sat where you are sitting now, fighting to provide services for the North, without much success, must be noted. The North Slope Borough was created to prevent the continuation of inequality. We had women like Brenda Itak and Eileen McLean that continued the fight for equality. In order to get basic services, we sold debt to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars to reach the 20th century. State aid was very minimal. We collect taxes from property within our boundaries, not only from the oil industry, but from me. As a business owner and homeowner, I pay taxes for services received from our borough government. I have a nice 2,300 square foot duplex in Anchorage that costs me $2,900 a year in property taxes. I also have a 2,000 square foot house in Barrow that costs me upwards of $7,155 annually. Calculate that out. That's $596 a month. That's a mortgage payment going to our borough government. The state is mandated to provide education for Alaskan youth. Your proposal ignores that responsibility for the North Slope. You expect us to provide 100% of funding. You're shirking your obligation. Our present formula provides part of basic education, and we provide the rest. Basic education in urban areas is defined differently than in rural areas. Music, phys ed, library resources, and intramural activities are expected, but in the bush, they're an extra. As assembly members, we gripe and groan about increases in the school budget. None of us has a PhD, but we can understand that as school population grows, so do the costs of education. As decision makers with far more educational background than us in rural Alaska, you must look to increase funding for all of Alaska, but not at the expense of a few districts that are trying to keep up. I ask you to look into your hearts and actively examine what's going on. We have a permanent fund that was developed to help the state through times of dwindling resources. Just because it's such a sacred cow doesn't mean you can't make adjustments. Thank you. I think you're looking in the wrong place. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Rahmat, for a very nice presentation. Questions?
No questions.
5.5 minutes, it was perfect. Questions of Mr. Rahmat?
I have a comment and a question. First comment is I can't imagine a classroom with 10 teenagers in one class. I graduated from a high school in Alaska with a class of 16, and so I understand what you're talking about. Yeah, I understand small schools and the needs of rural communities. The other on your property taxes, I concur, that's a lot of money. But I just did a quick calculation. Looks like that 2,000 square foot house is close to $400,000 in value. It's about $200 a square foot. Is that correct?
I built the house. I'm a contractor. And I argued the same issue when I got these tax bills with people that sat where I sit now. I got on the assembly because of this issue. I built a house. I know exactly to the dollar how much I have in it. I know that if I had hired a contractor, the price would have probably been close to $200,000 in cost. But now you've got to remember, I've got one of the bigger houses in town. Most everybody else lives in a house the size of my living room. House is about $96,000 in value, materials, freight, but I didn't count my time building it. It's not worth $400,000. I went before the assembly and argued that if they would buy that house from me, what they were assessing it at $396,000, I would sell it and build four more houses just like it, and I would have money left over.
We've all tried that. They won't.
They refused.
It's true all over the state. They won't do it. I've tried it.
It's very expensive to have a house up there. If you are building a house in the north, and this is in rural Alaska, and figure roughly that every dollar that you put into materials is going to be about $1.50 extra in freight. So you're doubling the price of a house. My taxes aren't just merely doubled from Anchorage to Fairbanks for a comparable size house. We pay out the nose up there. We pay taxes.
Mr. Chairman, I want to continue. I understand that you do, and that is a lot of money. The other in your statement, you said, you must also remember that our area did not benefit from oil revenue.
Right, we tax.
Yeah, I find that statement a hard one to believe, because I believe that your area has, and to a large extent it has because of very capable representation by the four people that you mentioned here, plus many others. And I think there has been a benefit, but I'm trying to figure out what it is you were saying in that statement. That's, you know, there's been a benefit, but along with the benefit has been an increase in the cost of living. Maybe that's what you're saying, and that you're also paying for the cost on a local level, that there's been a tremendous investment by people who live there. So it hasn't just been a handout from the state. If you can explain a little bit more what you mean when you say revenue, your area didn't benefit.
The state receives royalty from our oil development. We don't receive royalty. We have just the tax base. Now, granted, that's revenue, but it's not revenue that comes down to the state, your revenue, and then is shipped back to us in the form of major municipal assistance. We get some assistance. I can't say we don't, but I've lived up there since we formed the borough, and the state has not helped us very much in trying to get water and sewer systems into our communities. They are now coming out with grants that help in small measures. We've waited 25 years since I've been up there to get water into our communities, sewage treatment. I don't know if that should be totally our responsibility, but we're taking it on just to get it in. Revenues come to you and then they're distributed. We just assess taxes, and and consider that revenue, but it's a tax base. I don't know if that answered your question.
I think I understand better what it was you're saying. Thanks.
Other questions of Mr. Ahmed? Thank you for coming all this way, and thank you for putting together that nice presentation.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Let's go to the meeting room and ask Carl Rose to join us. Carl? Thank you for your indulgence and for waiting for us to get to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Carl Rose, Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards. I'd like to go back to last Friday when you mentioned that we're all trying to gain a better understanding of what the committee substitute of for Senate Bill 36 does and to seek some input, and I think you've received a lot of that. I concur with much that has been said. I continue to analyze some aspects, and I will provide you with written testimony. For today's purposes, I'd like to just take a look at what has taken place as of last week and give you some observations from my point of view. I go back to Albert Einstein's comment that no problem can be solved by the same consciousness that created it, and I subscribe to that. I think that's a good idea. And so as I've been trying to work with this funding problem for the better part of 10 years under this new foundation, I'm struggling to work outside of the box, think outside of the box, okay? And I think I've been in the wrong box. I've been looking at the foundation and taking a look at all the things that we could do, and I think you've done some things that merit further consideration. However, I think the box is one of adequacy. After 10 years of inadequate levels of funding, the foundation was never designed to survive 10 years and a 30% loss in buying power. I would suggest to you that in the mid-80s, when we were having some difficulty in many of our municipalities as a result of a downward turn in the economy and property value, the foundation kicked in to offset that, to provide some needy school districts, municipalities, with additional state aid to compensate through the foundation. And now I think that many of our municipalities have increased property value. And as a result, the foundation is working as it was designed. It's reducing state aid to those areas that are increasing in property value. That's how it was designed. But as I take a look at the process now, we're starting to change the foundation at a time when it doesn't serve us with what we think we should be receiving. And this is my way of saying to you that we are talking about equity in terms of population and how money should be distributed. I look at no proposals that have come forward in the last 2 years that address a 30% loss in buying power. It's as though the 30% loss in buying power has just been removed from the table, and we are starting to reshuffle that deck. Evidence the 39 school districts that have to be held harmless under this proposal. Now, I appreciate the opportunity to have this input because I bring this to you so we can take a look at this constructively. If 39 school districts are being held harmless, my concern then comes down to, how would I put this best? When I'm dealing with somebody one-on-one, and they tell me what their stated goals are, and my observation of their behavior shows me that their behavior is inconsistent with their stated goals, I have a concern. Now, I think we've stated some goals here on this proposal in terms of simplicity, equity, the money that's available, and timing. But when I look at the performance or the behavior, or as I would term, the actual numbers that got run, I don't have any answers for the changes that have taken place. So simplicity is a problem for me. I understand the concepts, and I think some of them are very good, but I believe Mr. Wright said earlier, some of the things that you're doing are very good, but they're a small percentage of what the problem is. So I think what we're doing is we're trying to do a better job in terms of the foundation and its appeal, and I think the stated goals are very good. The end result comes down to how do we distribute the remaining money absent a 30% loss in buying power? And the answer is 39 school districts being held harmless in the first year, and over a period of time, that hold harmless will be decreased and increased property value, or I'm sorry, increased local contribution through the mill rate will take over and balance that out. Well, I believe the next person who's going to testify will state firmly that now we're moving to an area of a decreased state contribution and an increased local contribution, or increased state mandates, decreased contribution, and an increased local contribution to make up for that. And it's a problem that I think we need to address. I think that simplicity, as I look at the actual proposal that's before us, I see some good things. But the simplicity starts to get lost somewhere when we look at the actual numbers that come out that are generated as a result of the calculations. When we take a look at the issue of equity, for many of us, equity is reality or the status quo. Any departure from that causes some real problems and I think may encourage litigation. I would like an opportunity to address those things up front and try to alleviate some of that pressure because I don't think the court should be deciding how we fund our schools. Lastly, the area of money. I understand the fiscal gap. I understand the resources of the state of Alaska. And I think many people before us have testified. I will tell you that the problems before us are very large, and they will require a larger way of thinking, an abundant mentality, if you will. There are solutions for these problems, and I know that they're not politically palatable right now. But when we take a look at issues of endowments to create wealth somewhere into the future, when we take a look at bonding authorities to address funding for schools and facilities into the future, when we take a look at a foundation to provide equity for all our kids in Alaska, I think it requires an abundant mentality because, and I will state this as clearly as I can, I think we suffer from a scarcity mentality today. There's not enough money to go around. Therefore, we have to do with what we have. We create the winners and the losers. We create the haves and the have-nots. And there's no room in there for all Alaskans. So I would encourage you, and I offer to work with you. We need to take a look at Alaskans. How do we get Alaskans from here to where they need to be viable in an economy into the future? I pledge my support to work with you. I would ask you to focus on these things because these are big issues that need a bigger way of thinking. With that, I know it's philosophical in nature. I'll provide you some written testimony here within the week. But I'd like to draw your focus onto how we get from here to there and make that circle big enough for all Alaskans.
Thank you, Mr. Rosen. Senator Lehman.
Mr. Chairman and Carl, while we're philosophizing and you're preparing your testimony, I'd urge you to also look at why costs are as high as they are. I mean, you say we suffer from a scarcity mentality, and you, as well as many other people, just assume, therefore, since the costs are high, that's the way they are, and we must fund to meet the costs. I think we need to also address why costs are high and do what we can to help think outside the box, to use your terms, to see if we can do some things so we can still provide the service but at less cost. Provide services, good services, but at less cost. It may not be doing it exactly the same way. And that's something that I think we all need to be joining together and doing. See, how can we do that?
Mr. Chairman, if I could respond, please. I would agree. We do have to take a look at the things that are most important to us and focus our attention on that. And there are some things that we may not be able to afford into the future. If we can recognize that, then fine. But we need to have the discussion, and I appreciate you giving us the opportunity to do that.
Other questions, Mr. Rose?
I have a couple. We've defined equity. One of the definitions is the ability of one's district to pay for their education and not a penny more. What was your definition of equity?
I think for many of us, for many out in school districts, they're looking at what they receive now, and that is their reality. And a gross departure from that would raise some serious questions. I think the issue here, we're requiring everyone to pay for their education. I think it's a good move. Honestly, I think it's a pretty good move. Many of the concepts that you have here are, I think, steps in the right direction. It doesn't equate to the dollars that get run on the actual numbers run, and that's kind of where I lose the simplicity. I look at the actual impact that we're going to have on school districts, and I start to look for the whys, and I really don't understand some of the calculations that have been made or why some assumptions have been made. Some of them, I believe, have been arbitrary, but I need to understand that a little bit better.
We'll be glad to help you do that. Just you mentioned litigation. And I would just, I thought it was very enlightening to read the Mattsu decision that came out in January by Justice Rabinowitz. That, to my way of thinking, what that decision said was that there is no equal protection clause for education under our Constitution, and that how we fund education is a majoritarian issue that has to be taken care of through the legislature. I mean, and that's what I think we're doing. So. That's if folks haven't read that or become familiar with that, I would suggest they do, because that was, I think, important in our decisions, our deliberations as we go through this process. Other questions, Mr. Rose? Thank you for being here. Mr. Ritchie? You're the one we've been looking for, the last one.
Yes, thank you,
Chairman.
And it is really challenging to be the last one after a great deal of long testimony. First, I'd like to thank Senator Wilken and the entire committee for the approach you've taken to this process. I think inviting early participation is an excellent way to begin. You've obviously shown your willingness to be flexible with provisions of the funding to ask people how to fix various portions, how to create equity if in fact that equity is not there in all cases right now, and also starting with goals, which I think is really an excellent way to begin, because it pretty much lays on the table what the intended outcome of the process is, and that makes a lot of sense. I work with the Alaska Municipal League and the Alaska Conference of Mayors, and I just want to make sure that we reserve our place at the table. Municipalities are the state's other partner in funding education. Right now, the state of Alaska funds about 75% of the cost of education. Municipalities fund about 25% right now, and that amount has been going up over the past several years quite substantially. The thing that we need to recognize is that this is not a state issue. This is a state and municipal issue. If there's going to be basic education provided in all areas of the state simply has to work with municipalities. It's not only a funding issue, but obviously there's state statutes that govern many of the aspects that we're looking at as far as controlling costs, in the state of Alaska. And of course, you know, there's a State Department devoted to education, which provides some regulation of municipalities. Local school boards obviously have a great deal of control. So it's literally a joint interlock system. And want to thank you very much, Senator Wilken, for being willing to come and talk to the Alaska Municipal League and the Conference of Mayors on April 1st. And that is an early opportunity to get some of the provisions laid out to municipal leaders. With all the materials that you've gotten over the past few days, it's unlikely you've got this on the top of your file, but I wanted to give you a few pieces of information that I think are important to the process. If you go to the first if you go to the first chart, what have you got? If you go to the first chart, what this shows essentially is the state contribution and the increases in the state contribution over the past 10 years versus the contribution.
Excuse me, sir. Do you have any more of those?
Yes, I do.
Just spin them around and pass them out to the folks behind. They can pass them out as best they can. Thank you.
And I can make additional copies of these available. This is just putting on the table some of the issues that municipalities have to face. And I guess the point I really want to get across is that we're facing exactly the same issue that the state is, a lack of resources, looking for ways to make money go stretch farther, and looking at new opportunities for working together to provide education more effectively. But basically what the chart shows is that during the several years after 1986, when there was a significant crash in revenues going to the state, there was a significant cut, and you can see the state contribution actually decreased substantially between the years of 1968-1989, and then there was a process over the next 3 years up until 1992 where the state contribution was more or less brought back up to about where it was back in 1986. Okay, during that time, there were significant cuts in services in municipal schools, but you can see there was a very significant increase in local contribution to schools, and then as the state contribution was coming back up, that increase flattened out a bit. And then if you look at 1992 and beyond, you can see a very significant trend towards the state's contribution flattening out, which, as Mr. Rose referred to, is basically using 1986 dollars in 1996, which are valued about three quarters of what they were back in 1986. Well, that gap, to the extent the gap is being filled by municipal government right now. And that shows a fairly sharply increasing trend, which is unlikely to be able to continue. In most municipalities, I think when people come in and look at doing business in a municipal government or in a city, they take a look at the tax structure. If your tax rates are taking a 30 or 45 degree trend, that's going to be a major consideration in coming into that community. The next page is simply a graphic showing about the approximate annual cost of what that means, funding 1996 schools and 1986 dollars. And the white column next to that is the amount of inflation that's been absorbed by the municipalities, and then the amount of inflation that's been absorbed by the state. And if you take a line and draw it right about in the middle of the white bar, that shows about how much the municipal contribution has increased to schools. And so municipalities have not, in fact, increased or totally offset the loss of purchasing power, and that basically has to do with the resources in communities. There simply isn't the ability to do that, and in fact municipalities and school districts have done a lot to make programs more efficient, but finally they've also had to do things like lay off teaching staff, lay off nurses, and programs, some of the things that you all are totally familiar with, and that's why we're all at the table. The last chart I wanted to share with you simply looking at trends in general in municipalities. So the property tax issue is not just localized to school issues, but has to do with basically the relationship between the state and municipalities. What this shows is a mirror image, essentially, of state cuts to various municipal programs. And one thing I'd like to mention is the state has been very good at working with the senator from Matsu, Senator Green, has put in a bill that would recommend reimbursing some of the losses that municipalities have from the senior citizen property tax exemption that was implemented by the state. Senator Lehman's put in a bill to allow municipalities to be transferred land from the state in certain circumstances. That may do something to local economic development. So it's a very broad picture. A number of other legislators have also been working with municipalities to deal with some of these issues over the long term. But I just wanted to say that the Conference of Mayors and the Municipal League isn't saying the state just has to dump money into the problem, because it's much bigger than that. We have exactly the same perspective as the state has. Looking at ways to allocate the funds in a more equitable manner obviously is something that has to be considered. As long as we keep the basic goal in mind that we're both providing basic education, and that needs to be the yardstick by which we determine whether the allocation process is fair or not. Obviously, if a municipality or a school district would receive less funds over the long term under a new formula, it has to be guaranteed somehow that that district is getting an equal education, or the students in that district are getting equal education with the state resources. So anyway, that's my presentation, and I'm basically just a placeholder to tell you that the Municipal League and the Conference of Mayors, this is as critical an issue to them as it is to you.
Thank you, Mr. Ritchie. Questions of the witness? Senator Lehman?
Kevin, thanks for these charts. Could you, and I think you're, what you use to derive these charts, the raw data is available, could you do the same thing for these time periods, showing what the actual state dollars are, the municipal dollars, and I assume there are other components. There's this other component, federal funding, that goes into it also. And if you can just show the of actual dollars in the nominal dollars, I guess it is, you know, the year in which appropriated. I'm sure we can do the same thing, but you may have it readily available that you use to derive, if you could. I'd like to see that also.
Sure. Other questions? Thank you, Kevin, for being with us today. Let's see. I think on the teleconference network, I think we've talked with everyone and everyone here in the hearing room. I'd like to thank the committee for their indulgence, for letting us go a little extra today. I think we have every buddy that has wanted to testify able to do it. I will take the committee's lead on what they think we ought to do next. Sheila and I will sit down, and as she started already, put together all those things that we've heard for the last 7 days. We've had some what I think is excellent comments and excellent testimony both here in this room and also in our office. So we'll try to blend that together as best we can and bring back something for this committee to look at. This is on the agenda for Wednesday. I'm not sure. We'll give you an update on Wednesday as to what we have. And if there's someone that wants to testify on Wednesday, we'll also do that. But absent that, we'll work on the plan and get it back to this table. Any input from you folks, of course, encouraged and welcomed. So anything else for the good of the committee today? Seeing none, thank you for your help, and we're adjourned.